This is Jay Sekulow. Breaking news. Supreme Court puts on hold the Ninth Circuit decision on the president's executive order on refugees.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The Supreme Court has temporarily lifted restrictions on part of the president's immigration order after a request from the Justice Department.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Justice Kennedy ruling that refugees with formal assurances from resettlement agencies can be blocked from entering the U.S.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Yesterday afternoon, an order came out from the Supreme Court of the United States in a case that we're involved in, and that is the case captioned Donald J. Trump versus the state of Hawaii. We filed briefs on behalf of the administration. The issue is the executive order that put a pause in place on travel. As you'll recall, it was a 90-day stay on travel from citizens for six particular countries and a 120-day stay on all refugees travel until we could get the systems in place. Now, there's been fights on this in the lower courts, and including even after the Supreme Court ruled saying that the bulk of the stay could, a bulk of the order would stay in place, which clearly the president has the authority under the Constitution to do this. You'd agree, or you know, if you disagree with the policy, you got to understand something. And I think the policy is correct, by the way, but legally it's absolutely correct. The president has that authority under the Constitution. I mean, he clearly has that delegated authority. But the question becomes here, and that is the Ninth Circuit cases going up, and it's groups like the state of Hawaii, but also some of the immigration groups are saying, well, no, we think that the even under the Supreme Court's initial ruling that it wasn't fair, it wasn't done right, as it relates to people that were coming here as refugees with agreements between the government agencies and the refugees for resettlement, which had been fraught with nothing but problems to begin with, Jordan. So this is not any, again, you know, you put the policy aside. Let me tell you, constitutionally, this isn't even close.
Yeah, and again, it's the Ninth Circuit activist judges trying to impose their will when the Supreme Court's already issued an opinion. I think that's why the rebuke here is one that has to be underscored, because the Ninth Circuit trying to impose its own will in a situation where it was clear that the way they were defining refugees having a connection to the United States, right, it would be an open flow on everyone. And that is not what the administration felt was best for their policy. And those are the decisions they get to make as when you get elected and when, yep, you get to run the executive branch. These are the kind of decisions you make. The Supreme Court has ultimately decided that they will actually hear this case.
Yes, October 10th.
But, you know, when it comes down to it, we don't yet know the government's position. Neither one of this is long term. But I think that what the government will say is that you always have to have the option to be able to put these pauses in place.
Now, interesting, the administration only challenged in this emergency order at the Supreme Court, I'll tell you how that works in a minute, regarding the refugees with prior agreements issue, not the expansion that the lower courts did regarding grandparents and grandchildren, which were included by court order. Again, putting the policy issue aside, I'm not sure that the courts really had I don't think the courts had the authority to do that. I think that rests with the executive. But the administration took up this issue regarding the refugees with prior agreements because, after all, that undercuts completely the idea of determining who's coming, because some of these refugee agencies are operating with very little or no information. We want your reaction on this and the president's decision now at the Supreme Court of the United States. We'll take your calls and comments at 1-800-684-3110. Do you think it is important to have this stay in place? Do you think the policy is important so that we know who's coming into the United States? Again, we'll take your calls and comments at 1-800-684-3110. And Logan, of course, will also take calls and comments via Facebook and Periscope and social media.
That's right. 1-800-684-3110 is right to get your voice heard. You can also get your comments in Facebook.com/JaySekulow, Periscope, or Twitter at JaySekulow, broadcasting live in all those outlets, as well as ACLJ.org. All those social media feeds is where you get your comments in. Some of those do end up on the air. But we got some phone lines open, so now's your time to have your voice heard. 1-800-684-3110.
Let me also say to you that continue your support for the work in the American Center for Law and Justice. That keeps us in court. We filed briefs on the merits of this case. Case will be argued October 10th before the Supreme Court of the United States. Very important issue. But we want to know, as Logan said, we want to know your comments on this. 1-800-684-3110. Then we're going to turn attention a little bit later in the broadcast to this dossier issue. We'll say funded by the FBI. Bizarre. Back with more.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
The broadcast, everyone, if you're just joining us. So the Supreme Court temporarily lifts a restriction that was placed restriction on President Trump's travel pause, is what I like to call it, which is, I think, what it really is the 90 days and 120 days. 120 days stay on all refugee travel, 90 days stay on travel from six particular countries. Supreme Court has already reviewed it on a stay basis and granted and said that the order was constitutional, made a couple of minor adjustments, although I think the entire order should have been upheld. Interestingly, there was a challenge brought in the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit, of course, changed again, even what the Supreme Court of the United States said. And specifically as it relates to this issue, which is the administration is only challenged the order. This is the Ninth Circuit, because the Ninth Circuit said that refugees that had prior agreements with certain agencies would be allowed in. Well, you know, the problem with that is that's not what the president said, and that's not what the executive order said, and that's the president's authority, not the court's ability to craft it. So it was a one-page order signed by Justice Kennedy. The court temporarily blocked what the Ninth Circuit did last week by saying refugees could get in, even when the Supreme Court previously said they could not. That opinion, though, required a brief from the state of Hawaii. That was filed today. So I expect we'll get an answer on the full nature of this in the next couple of days. I'm optimistic that the position we advocated in our briefs will carry the day. There's going to be a full argument on this on October 10th before the entire Supreme Court. And again, state of Hawaii just filed their brief, so I've got that here. We filed a brief in the case as well. That brief that was filed in the case asserts the same position, or advocates the same position that the administration was. So we basically filed a brief in support of President Trump on this. This is independent of my responsibilities, by the way, as it relates to representing the president and other matters. This was as the American Center for Law and Justice. So here's the brief that we filed in the case on the merits. I'm holding it up for our friends at Facebook. Do we have a shot of this? Maybe we can put of our brief. Let's go ahead and put it up on the screen for Facebook and Periscope. Again, we filed our briefs on this case, so we're at the Supreme Court dealing with this right now. All right, we're taking your calls and comments at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. We're talking about this issue. And then Trey Gowdy making news on the whole dossier, that whole Russian dossier by the supposed spy steal from the United Kingdom. That's creating a whole new cycle. We'll talk about that as well. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110. Let's go right to them.
Stephanie's calling in Montana online too. You're on the air.
Hey, Stephanie.
Hey there. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. Hey, you know, I really agree with our president. I think that he has also good insight from people around him. And I think that he had absolute right to do what he did. That's his job, and I think he's doing a good job at it. The other thing I'd like to ask people, and I ask myself all the time, is how do we know that the people that we're bringing in, their actual true intentions are to be here to be cared for and protected instead of
because
being
we
an
need
enemy?
Yeah, you bring up the point, and I've said this. Listen, I'm in favor of we're a country based on immigrants, and I said this last week on the DACA thing. I mean, there's a lot of confusion out there about the whole DACA issue, and that's these young kids that came here through no fault of their own. Their parents brought them, and the president said, you got 6 months, Congress. If you want to make DACA the law, that's fine. And from a policy standpoint, I understand that. I would agree with that, to protect those with the work permits or something that makes perfect sense from a policy standpoint. But from a legal standpoint, you have to do it the right way, and that's legislation. This is the same kind of issue. I happen to agree with the policy of putting this pause in place until we can figure out who's coming into the United States and what their intents are, because what we have learned is we don't know. We've not done a good job, and I'm one who favors immigration, and I favor immigration reform. But when it comes to asylum, which I'm in favor of the ability for asylum to be done, when we know what we're dealing with, and right now the fact of the matter is we don't. The system has failed.
Yeah, that's right. And so all the government was looking for here, remember, they've had to defend this now since the beginning, defend in court, is these 90 days and 120 days to put together reports on how they can better vet both those seeking immigration from six specific countries and refugees from all over the world who are coming here, how to best manage the refugee flow, how to best manage immigration from just six countries of particular concern, to put in new standards in place. That's all our government was asking to do. And so the fight over this has been very extreme. The rhetoric has been extreme as well. But as we've said from the very beginning, the Trump administration and the way the president acted here was totally constitutional, whether you like this policy or not, totally within the power of the president and with the executive branch, and that they would ultimately win and continue to win at the Supreme Court. And that's what we saw here, is it yet again the Supreme Court vindicating the position of the Trump administration.
And I believe that on the October 10th hearing, they will, too.
And so it's not getting a lot
of news
coverage on most media outlets because it's a vindication yet again by a moderate member of the Supreme Court,
Justice Kennedy,
that this is okay.
All right, let me play for you a flashback from John Brennan, former CIA director. This is what he said regarding utilizing refugee flows impacting the United States. Again, this is not President Trump's administration. This is one that was under Barack Obama. Take a listen.
ISIL has a large cadre of Western fighters who could potentially serve as operatives for attacks in the West. And the group is probably exploring a variety of means for infiltrating operatives into the West, including in refugee flows, smuggling routes, and legitimate methods of travel.
I mean, okay, let me say what he said again. And these groups are exploring a variety of means of infiltrating operatives into the West, that's us, including refugee flows, so that's what we're talking about in the travel restrictions, smuggling routes, and even legitimate methods of travel. So even when they come in legitimately, so that means extreme vettings has to be required. That's from John Brennan. Everybody wants to ignore that. Now, Than, what is the sense in Washington right now as it relates to this issue? Because, I mean, the deference here to the president constitutionally, legally is clear. What are the political side of this right now?
It's clearly an Article II power because it invokes national security. I think putting the pieces together, this is the challenge for members of Congress. It's not really much of a challenge, but this is what we've been telling them. Look, clearly you have ISIS bragging about the fact that they are going to use the refugee program. Then you have the testimony you just played from John Brennan saying that it was going to happen and saying, quite frankly, that these are regions that they cannot adequately vet. So, Jay, anyone who wants to push back on the president's authority to do this is going to have to assume upon themselves the risk that someone is going to enter the program, the refugee program, enter the United States and inflict harm. Jay, that harm would be on those who stood in the way of these common restrictions because this is clearly in his Article II powers. And yet, you can play soundbite after soundbite of folks on the left who continue to push back on it.
Yeah, but I just played John Brennan, who said they're going to utilize these methods to get in the United States. So, I mean, there you have it. I mean, you can't be any clearer than that, and that's coming from John Brennan, again, not the Trump administration. Let's go ahead and take another call or a comment, Logan. What do you want to
take? Tina said that's the whole reason for the temporary travel pause, because we don't know who's coming in and what their intentions are. How is this not good for national security?
Well, this is, of course, Jordan, the great question, because it is good for national security, because we know that if John Brennan and if the CIA was correct, that the infiltration techniques utilized by these terror groups, we're going to use our existing flow, including the refugee system.
Yeah, so why not try and do something about it? I mean, that's all the administration wanted here was time to look at the measures that were in place. One was for refugees in general, not specific to any country or region of the world. But again, we were dealing with a new refugee flow. We needed to figure out, temporarily, what to do about the refugees so that we know who these people are that are coming to the United States. When it comes to the immigration issue, that was the 90 days, and that was just six specific countries that were targeted because of the threat they posed. By the way, those were countries identified by the Obama administration as countries that posed a threat when it comes to terrorism and utilizing what John Brennan was talking about there, utilizing existing means to get here to carry out attacks on Americans. By the way, what have we seen since this has gone into effect? Not a lot of terrorist activity, thank God, in the United States of America. We haven't heard a lot of reports about cells being, while Europe's continued. I mean, it's throughout the summer. We've seen the attacks. We have not seen, and I think that some of that has to do absolutely with the fact that we don't have unlimited flows of people from these countries of concern.
All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about this travel restriction. We want your comments on this. We got some calls that we're going to get to right after the break, but we do have some phone lines open at 800-684-3110. Second half hour of the broadcast, I'm going to get into the Trey Gowdy's statement that he's issued publicly, saying that he thinks the Democrats may be fearful that the Trump dossier that was a basis upon which this whole Russia investigation started was a piece of fiction. We're going to get into that in the second half hour of the broadcast because I think it's worthy in light of everything. I'm going to be on, supposed to be on Sean Hannity's radio broadcast today and television tonight talking about some of these issues. So, again, we'll take more of your calls and comments when we come back at 800-684-3110.
That's right. A few lines are open right now, so if you want your voice heard, this is a good time to do it. You can also get your comments in on social media, facebook.com/jseculo. But Mike and Matt, who are on hold right now, and a few other lines that are lining up, we'll get to you guys when we get back. We also have videos coming up later on in the show. If you watch this show online, we never go to break. We either continue our discussion during the break, or we have exclusive videos that run just for people who watch our show. That's on ACLJ.org, Facebook.com/JSeculo, or on Twitter or Periscope at JSeculo.
You also, by the way, if you get our emails, and I hope you do, we've got a petition up right now regarding this whole situation involving that attempt to really discredit that Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals nominee. The dogma lives loudly within you, said Senator Feinstein. We had a video that we posted. I think it's had over 600,000 views now. We'll maybe play that during one of the breaks. We probably should do that. So we've got a petition up on that at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. We'll be back with your calls at 800-684-3110 in just a moment.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation. The rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online aclj.org.
That's right. Drum calls.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. So if you're just joining us, the Supreme Court issued a stay yesterday, and that's a temporary stay because the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, even after the Supreme Court ruled earlier in the summer that the most of the president's travel restrictions could go in place on refugees and on immigration, that in fact they wanted it extended to agreements between government agencies and refugees for resettlement after arrival in the United States should be included. But that's not what the president in the executive order put in there. So the Ninth Circuit wrote it in. And what Justice Kennedy said, at least as to right now, he said you can't do that. So I think ultimately that, by the way, I think that's where it goes. I'd be very surprised if the court in its merits does not reach the same conclusion. Let's go ahead and take calls. We got some folks holding 1-800-684-3110.
Yep, let's go to Matt on line two in Los Angeles, California.
Okay, great. Hi, Matt. How are you? You're on the air.
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Thanks. Good.
Great. I'm actually out of here, out of Los Angeles.
Yep.
Some of the things that I agree with you, I think he totally has the right to give those sanctions, right? He totally has the right to do that, obviously, as the president. I think the biggest problem I see is a lot of people kind of forget the history. Now, listen, unless you happen to be Native American, that means you're right. Native from this country, like you're Native American, we're all refugees. Like, that's the biggest
thing. It's a nation founded by religious refugees.
Correct. A nation founded by religious refugees. Correct. Totally correct. I agree with you 100%. But here's my other thing, right? They had this ban, and they particular picked certain countries, and I know that people say, oh, well, it was Obama that actually
listed those countries. Yeah, those were countries of – they were called countries of particular concern listed by the State Department under President Obama. But go ahead.
Correct. Totally agree. But we've also not included – you know, places like Saudi Arabia, Turkey, United Arab Emirates.
There's an issue. I would jump in, though. There is an issue because if you actually look at the six countries versus the entire world, I mean, listen, you go through lots of countries that are not perfect, but this is very specific to countries that either have failed governments. Well, Saudi Arabia doesn't have a failed government. We actually work closely with their security apparatus. These are failed states and then hot or hostile states. So you look at Libya. Failed state right now. There's no active government. There's no way the government there is going to help you to figure out the vetting. Syria is like a failed state plus an enemy. Iran is an enemy. They could certainly vet the people for you, but they're not going to help. Yemen is a failed state. Somalia is a failed state. And then Sudan, again, more like in Iran. They could probably vet the people, but they're not going to help you. That's it. It's not going to get into every part of the world or every African country. Because if you look at every African country, many will help you. They will assist the United States in vetting those who are looking for refugee status. And you're, I think, getting refugee confused with immigration.
Yeah, that's different.
These six countries were immigration countries. Refugees, we didn't narrow out and say just refugees from these six places.
We just put a pause on refugees, refugees until we figure out the resettlement issues. Now, Matt, I've said this publicly, and I'll say it again. I'm in favor of comprehensive immigration reform, and policy-wise, I have no problem with DACA. I didn't like. I objected to the President Obama doing it by decree. He had no constitutional authority to do that, and the courts on the DAPA program said right, and it would apply. The same law logic would apply there. So I think letting legislature, let the Congress fix it, is the way to go. By the way, Than, what kind of movement? There seems to be pretty bipartisan support for that. It's rather unremarkable that you're not going to ship 800,000, 23-year-olds back who've been here since they're 4 years old.
Well, the fact that you have a president that is willing to acknowledge that it is an Article I power actually has Congress talking about it again. Yep. So, Jay, I actually think there's a possibility that they could do something here. But the common thread, again, it's that you have to know who's coming into the country, whether it's through legislation or refugee policy. And I think the president struck the right balance with that.
You know, the irony, Jordan, in this, and Logan, let's see what kind of comments we're getting. You can get ready for those or we'll take a call. But the irony of this is that President Trump will probably get this DACA program through the legislature and sign into law, and probably comprehensive immigration reform is my guess.
Yes. I mean, I'd say, and this would be the first president.
Since Ronald Reagan,
since 1986, that got anything substantive done with immigration. I mean, we have talked about it. I mean, I'd say we talked it to death. I mean, we've talked about it through the Bush administration.
Yep.
We talked about it through Obama. And now we're not talking about it as much under President Trump because people thought, oh, this is someone very opposed to immigration, when in fact he's actually put in the works where Congress is kind of being forced to act. We're seeing Congress, Dan mentioned this, for the first time on many issues work in a bipartisan way. It's not getting as much attention. I know some partisan folks, and Steve Bannon's done interviews, and they don't love this, and there's been two massive hurricanes,
yep.
So it hasn't gotten as much attention. But you realize Congress has been working in a fairly bipartisan yep. way over the last few weeks, and it's not as I don't think either side wants to highlight that because it doesn't necessarily help them
but
politically.
I think it's good for the country.
Right.
And like I said, I'm in favor of comprehensive immigration reform. You're not going to deport 12 million people that are here illegally, so let's figure out how to get them work permits, a system in place, paying taxes. Those are the kind of things that make sense. And I think you're going to see that. I think that is quite possible. All right. Let's take a call. We can take another call.
Yeah,
before the break.
Since there's two, we're going to go to Mike on line three in New York. Mike, you're on the air. Mike from Oregon,
hey.
Hold on. We'll get to you in a minute.
Hey, Mike from New York, you're on.
Yes. Hey, Jay.
Hey.
I've got a question.
Yep.
Obama, for his 8 years in office, literally could do anything, and no circuit court would do a thing about it. But now that we have Trump in, how is it possible? Can you explain this in layman's terms to the people out there?
Yeah, so, you know, the Wall Street Journal called it the Ninth Circuit is part of the resistance. They're making this stuff up. I mean, my joke always was if you want a case at the Ninth Circuit, hold on to your win as long as you can, because if it goes to the Supreme Court, generally you're going to lose. And I think 8 out of 10, that's generally the case. So I think, look, the Ninth Circuit tried this, but as Jordan said, as Stan said, the Supreme Court is, I think, correctly doing what the Constitution says. And this is the authority that goes with the presidency. It's part of the power of the president of the United States. I think it's that clear. All right. I think we could do it. Logan, you think you can do it?
If you want to.
Yeah.
Why?
But okay. No, we'll take the break coming up to the next 30 minutes. We'll get Mike's call. We're also going to turn our attention to another issue that we are very involved in, and Trey Gowdy has now highlighted this. And the headline in Daily Caller reads, Trey Gowdy wonders if Democrats are, quote, fearful that Trump dossier is a piece of fiction, which I think that's exactly the quote. And that was the whole basis upon, by the way, which started this whole, that's true, during what you said. It started the whole Russian investigation.
Yes, this is the dossier that led to salacious allegations about President Trump, which led to this got into the hands of the FBI, which this whole
which
idea
may have been
of
paying for
issues, who certainly we know was considering paying for it.
Yep.
We believe that it was Republican campaigns that were initially paying for this research. Then it switched to Hillary Clinton. Then the FBI was ultimately deciding, and there's some reports saying the FBI decided not to pay for it. But let's be honest, the FBI has got open accounts and accounts that are going to be much more difficult to track. But what we do know is that whether they paid for it or not, it influenced them.
Yeah, it sure did.
And they were passing it around. Remember they briefed
yep.
President Trump on it?
Oh, yeah.
They were briefing
like
U.S. senators.
Almost.
And this goes to people like John McCain, who have been, I think, a...
Oh, he was a conduit of this.
Yes, and passing
this
information
around. We're
going to
get into this in the second half hour of the broadcast. So if you want calls on that topic, we'll take them as well at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. We're coming up at the end of the first 30 minutes of the broadcast. Logan, let everybody know how they can get the full hour.
Yep, you can get your full hour of JSecu Live. If you don't get it on your normal station, which a lot of you do, you can find us broadcasting live right now on Facebook and Periscope. That's at facebook.com/JSecu or on Twitter or Periscope at JSecu. You can also find us on ACLJ.org, archived later on the ACLJ app that's available for iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or in the channel marketplace for Roku. Just search for ACLJ. Subscribe to the JSecu Live podcast.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
the broadcast, everyone. Taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. We talked about the Supreme Court issued, Justice Kennedy issued a stay of the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit tried to expand the groups that could exempt out of the travel pause that the president put in place that they earlier, the Supreme Court said, was constitutional. And they wanted, so the government brought up a challenge on only one provision, and that was a provision regarding refugees with prior agreements and with organizations. And because of the concern over not being able to verify the refugee status, as John Brennan just said, that was put in the executive order. The Ninth Circuit said, well, we want it broader. Justice Kennedy said, nope, we're going back to what the president wrote, at least temporarily, as they go ahead with a, and this is what will happen in this kind of time frame. The brief from Hawaii was filed this morning. They're responding to this, so I think we'll get either a decision, full decision from Justice Kennedy or from the entire court on this probably later today or later this week. And then, of course, the whole case is being argued in October. So we filed briefs on behalf of the administration on that. And as I said, I'm in favor of comprehensive immigration reform, but you got to do it through the legal process. Let's go ahead and take some phone calls, Logan, at 1-800-684-3110. Who do we have next?
Let's go to Mike, who's calling on line one in Oregon. Thanks for holding.
Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. Hey. I just have a simple question. After the initial 121 yep. days, then what happens? I mean, can they extend the ban or do they fight some more over it?
Well, they could extend the ban. In other words, the 120 days was put in place so that a verification process could be established by the agency. So it's really going to be at that point the agencies, Homeland Security, INS, Immigration Naturalization Service, being able to sign off to the president that they have a process in place and that the six countries of a particular concern have also met their requirements. If they haven't, the president can issue another executive order. I'm sure it'll be challenged again. And, of course, once the Supreme Court rules in October, I suspect that will end any future challenges. But these activist judges and groups are going to continue to fight, and you just got to respond. That's what we did when filing a brief. But I think that, again, is the president's going to be looking to the agencies at the expiration of the time. Jordan, what are you hearing?
Yeah, that's ultimately the part of this executive order is not that, okay, after the 90 days or 120 days, that you must then open the floodgates. If the agencies, again, say that they are ready or not ready, the Supreme Court is not going to say, ultimately, however they come down, they're not going to say, well, yeah, you could do this for 90 days and 120 days, but you can't do it for 120 days and 150 days.
Right.
It's going to be you can do this or you can't right. indefinitely. And so I think the administration was being reasonable here by saying this is what we initially need to do in a review. And it may be that after that part, we start allowing refugees from certain places to come and immigration from two of these six countries.
Right.
One country that was initially named on this list was Iraq. And they got upset, and so their government immediately put in safeguards in place and said, okay, we will start helping you as the U.S. government to vet people coming in from Iraq. And so guess what? They were removed from the list. So if these yeah. countries want to work their way off of being removed from the list, the six that are named, they can. Do you think Iran's going to do that? No. Do you think Sudan's going to do that or Libya? Libya can't. I mean, they have no effective government yeah. to work off the list. So they probably need to remain for longer than 100 days.
That's going to be a determination. Yeah, that'll be a determination base. So, Stan, what are you hearing in Washington on all of this right now? I think it's important for our audience to know what's going on up in Washington.
Well, there's incredibly tangible progress being made on it, not just what Jordan said, but also, you know, the Obama administration, when they processed these applications, Jay, they did it on an arbitrary timeline. You had to interview the applicants within a certain timeline, so forth and so on. Jay, the Trump administration has done away with that. They are taking a security-based approach. They will not process people on a timeline that is arbitrary. So again, they'll reevaluate it as it comes up, but already they are making progress at the agency level, and we just have to see how long it takes to get where they need to be for that extreme vetting.
All right, here we go, folks. We're going to take your calls and comments when we come back from the break at 1-800-684-3110. By the way, for our friends in the Chicagoland area, September 20th, Jay Sekulow Band, all of us are going to be at Judson University on September 20th at 7 o'clock at night for a free concert. We encourage you to attend. We're going to have a lot of fun. Looking forward to that. The entire band will be there. That's, again, if you're in the Chicagoland area, we encourage you to do that at Judson University. We'll be there at 7 o'clock. All right. We'll be back with your calls at 1-800-684-3110 in just a moment.
This is a critical time for our nation. and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation, the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. As I mentioned, Jay Sekulow Band is going to be live in concert at Judson University on September 20th at 7 o'clock, and we're looking forward to that. So I'm going to be spending some time at Judson University, but the entire band is coming. So we're going to have a good time and a live concert there, and hope to get that video, too, and we'll be able to share it to our audiences as well. But again, if you're in the Chicagoland area, September 20th, 7 o'clock, look forward to that. All right, let's take I want to take one more call on the immigration issue, and then I want to go to the fake dossier, or a piece of fiction, as Trey Gowdy calls it, and we will take your calls and comments about that at 1-800-684-3110. But let's take Carl's call first.
Right, Carl in California, you're on the air.
Hi, Carl, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
Well, I came to this country in 1956.
Yes, sir.
I'm an immigrant from Germany, and it took me about almost 6 months to get cleared. I had a criminal check, I had a medical check, I had everything. And I don't see anything wrong with delaying anything for 90 days or 120 days to check out people that want to come to this country.
Well, my grandfather, Carl, I appreciate it. My grandfather came to the United States from Russia in 1914. I'm only the second generation of my family born in the United States, so I'm the grandson of an immigrant. And you know what? It took him... Amanda found it online. What was it, 14 years to get his?
At least,
14 years. Logan's wife found my grandfather's naturalization from the U.S. District Court judge. I think it took 14 years to get that. All right, Trey Gowdy has made a statement, and you're going to want to comment on this at 1-800-684-3110, about the dossier. I want to put this in context. The dossier was this by Christopher Steele, a purported MI5 spy for Great Britain. Ends up being that it was, as Trey Gowdy calls it, a piece of fiction. But it really started the whole Russia probe. Here's what Trey Gowdy said. Take a listen.
Who commissioned it is important, but I'm much more interested in whether or not the underlying data was accurate. And the only way to know whether it's accurate is for the Bureau to investigate the sources and the sub-sources. And then I would think everyone would want to know, did our premier law enforcement agency, the FBI, rely on this document to initiate a criminal probe?
Now, people need to understand what Trey Gowdy's saying. He's saying that, was this dossier the basis upon which this entire Russia probe began? And I think Trey Gowdy he knows the answer to that. We all know the answer to that. It was the basis. So it certainly was one of the key basis upon which this began. And here's the question you got to ask yourself. What if that was false? And it looks like it wasn't. And what if the FBI was either arranging for it or ultimately paying for it? And none of those questions are being answered right now. We want your reaction to all this at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Before we get your reaction on the phones and on Facebook and Periscope, let's get our reaction from our director of policy, Professor Harry Hutchinson. So, Professor Hutchinson, your take on this.
Well, Jay, it's my intuition that the whole Russia collusion story is built on fiction. It's fiction grounded on original fiction, in part coming from Christopher Steele, who spent months putting together a 35-page document, totally unverified, totally uncorroborated, and yet we have Democrats who are pushing back against Trey Gowdy's attempt to learn something about the sources and the origination of this FBI investigation. We need to know, why did the FBI rely on this so-called Trump dossier? Did the FBI pay for it? Did the FBI interfere in the United States election? So there's a higher probability that the FBI interfered in the 2016 presidential election than Putin did. And yet we have Democrats who are consumed with this so-called Russia collusion story, which is grounded in fiction.
Well, what Trey Gowdy has said is that for months now, the FBI and Department of Justice have ignored requests for information about the dossier. And again, I want to take your calls and comments on this at 1-800-684-3110. What does that tell you, Jordan?
I think that what we know is that there was a leadership gap at the FBI. Jim Comey was let go, and it was his lackey who stepped in. And remember, that was someone associated with Hillary Clinton and his wife, unsuccessful Democrat campaigns. And these are supposed to be people who stay out of the political process. And Harry said they're using this overtly political document. It was paid for opposition research. And it must have been so bad that first it was Republicans paying for it, supposedly. And none of them used it. I mean, there was no indication, as salacious as this was, no candidates against Donald Trump on the Republican Party used it, which means they probably thought this information was junk. But then Fusion GPS was able to sell it to Hillary Clinton to keep paying for it.
Right.
Okay. I don't think that she used it. I mean, I think that it was probably so unfounded. But who got duped by it? Surprise, surprise, the U.S. government. And why? Because they're coming at it with a political message as well. This was likely Jim Comey's attempt to pull a Hoover on Trump. It was to say, look at this info I've got on you. I don't know if it's true or not, but I could bring you down, basically. And Jim Comey did this to Donald Trump. Brought him in.
And said, we've got, cleared the room and said, we have this information.
Yeah,
that we've come in. You need to be aware of it. And it's salacious. And it's about you. I just want you to know it's out there. Except everyone is indicating right now that this information was not correct. Not only was it not correct, why in the world was the FBI involved in the manufacture of it? And then if it's not correct and the FBI was involved in the manufacture of it, why are we shocked that James Comey got fired? I mean, let's put this all together. And James Comey should get fired for doing things like leaking information about conversations he had with the president of the United States. Of course, he leaked it after he was terminated. But this goes to, I think, James Comey fundamentally when he engaged in election interference, and Harry said this, and it's absolutely correct. And look, I condemned it when he went after, in a sense, he was going after Hillary Clinton, reopening it and having the big press conference on that. I thought all of that was out of line, inappropriate, not what the Federal Bureau of Investigation should be allowed to do. So now there's also a call for James Comey, Than, to come back up before Congress.
Yeah, before the Senate Judiciary Committee, I think that call is going to be made. I think he may be subpoenaed, Jay. But look, I think at a fundamental level, Trey Gowdy is calling the bluff of Democrats here because they've been so obsessed with this investigation. And if they truly are, if they think something is there, they should want nothing more than the source dossier that led to the investigation. And yet, Jay, they are resisting that being turned over. You know, Trey Gowdy might have been nice when he said it's a piece of fiction or it's made up, because that is really the best case scenario for these Democrats. The worst case scenario is what it now looks like is true, that the FBI was involved to at least some extent. And either way, the whole narrative goes up in smoke, though, and Trey Gowdy is calling that bluff.
All right, let's go ahead, Logan, and take a phone call, and we'll get some more comments.
All right, let's go to Kay, who's calling in Oklahoma on line one.
Hi, Kay.
Hi.
Hey.
I do definitely believe that the FBI needs to be investigated. From what I've read and been watching this closely, they even helped to pay for this dossier. How can you trust them?
Well, we don't know for sure if they paid for the dossier or not, but they are sure avoiding Harry coming clean on this. And
absolutely.
And it's getting everyone, including me. Trey Gowdy's not the only one saying what's going on here.
Jay, the real question is, why is the FBI and the DOJ resisting the release of relevant information in connection with this dossier? Why does the House Intel Committee need to issue a subpoena? The FBI and the DOJ are also resisting the Senate Judiciary Committee's request for information. So I think what we have here is some inferential evidence suggesting that deep state operatives are resisting the disclosure of relevant information, which would clear, at the end of the day, I think, the president of the United States.
So let's listen to what Adam Schiff, the Democrat from California House Intel Committee, here's what he had to say.
Sometimes the defense opts for a strategy of trying to put the government on trial. And here I think there's a hope that if they can impeach Christopher Steele and they can impeach the FBI and DOJ, maybe they can impeach the whole Russia investigation. But that's not our purpose. It's really at cross purposes. We ought to be trying to figure out how much is accurate within what Mr. Steele reported, not trying to discredit him for some reason.
Well, wait a minute. We're relying. You're talking about the presidency of the United States, Jordan, and they're relying on a already questionable document impacting the presidency of the United States, paid for possibly we don't know this, by the FBI, maybe paid for by Republican operatives, maybe by the Clinton campaign. By the way, Hillary Clinton blames James Comey in her book. She blames Comey for her as a significant part of her not winning.
Yeah, so these Fusion GPS guys, who are two reporters who have had, they left the Wall Street Journal. So they were selling it first to Republican campaigns, then to, or at least operations, whether or not it was directly to a campaign is unclear as well. Then supposedly the Clinton campaign, whether or not it was directly paid for by the campaign, unclear. But none of the information contained here, especially the most salacious information, was made public until just pure opponents of President Trump, at the time already president-elect, became president. And it was people like John McCain shoving this information around and the FBI. And that is a scary point when you have a U.S. government agency like the FBI with this kind of info.
All right, we've got the last segment of the broadcast coming up. That means you get to ask us on any topic you want. Phone lines are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Last segment of the broadcast. You can ask us anything. 1-800-684-3110. Back with your calls and comments in just a moment.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Last segment of the broadcast, everyone. Again, we're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Lines are jammed up right now. Let me say this. We talked last week about the situation with Dianne Feinstein and the questioning and Senator Durbin on the judicial nominee, Professor Amy Barrett from Notre Dame. And now this is a headline out of Politico. Senators take fire over questions from Catholic judicial nominee, and it's both University of Notre Dame's president, where Professor Barrett taught, but also Princeton University's president, saying that this was outrageous. And I think it was and is absolutely outrageous. And I'm going to go quickly to everybody on this, and we'll take some calls. Jordan, I think the political fallout for the Democrats that were doing this is going to be significant. This offended a lot of people.
Yes, and so it was almost like they were making campaign ads to run against themselves. I mean, it's not so much Feinstein in California, but it's for anybody associated with the Democrat Party. And the idea here, again, the terminology that in, you know, this time period, and we're in 2017, and we're still running around calling people dogmatic in the United States because they happen to be a Catholic or and they actually take their faith seriously. But for that, it's one of those dog whistle words. You know, we use that when we talk about the race issue on the other side of politics. This is one that is a whistle to those because we talk about, you know, extremist Islamic terrorism. It's almost trying to make that comparison. You are someone who cannot be trusted because you put your religious belief too seriously. And that is a real problem in the United States of America if we allow that kind of political view and the people who are writing that for Dianne Feinstein to continue to perpetuate that.
Yeah, and Harry, from a policy standpoint, allowing that level of inquiry is problematic.
Absolutely.
Especially with that tone.
Absolutely. So I think Senator Feinstein and Senator Durbin were propelled to offer a strong interrogation of Professor Barrett. Why? Because they wanted to issue a dog whistle for left-wing fundraisers. Yep. But I also think Catholic voters, in general, are middle-of-the-road voters. And so this direct attack on faith should indeed backfire on the Democrats.
So what's going to be the fallout on this? And then Logan will go right to calls. What's going to be the fallout of this stand in Washington? Because we're going to talk about this more on the broadcast tomorrow. But this is a big deal. And I don't want to let it go away. I think this is something we have to address.
Well, Harry makes the right point that the scariest thing is that it was intended to score points with the political left's base. I mean, I think pure and simple, Jay, I think the fallout should be a vote this week on Amy Barrett because it would expose those who are engaging in this. And you know what? It would also force them to vote on her. Is Dianne Feinstein going to go down and vote against her? She probably would.
She probably would.
She should be forced to.
I'm absolutely in agreement on that. All right, let's go ahead, Logan, take some calls and comments.
Let's go to Mark in South Carolina on line three. You're on the air.
Hey, Mark.
Hello,
you're on
Mark.
The air.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to see if one of you guys could just give us a hard definition. We hear it thrown around in politics and on media all the time of what comprehensive immigration reform really is. What's it really mean?
I think this is a great question. So in my view, you've got three fundamental issues when you're looking at immigration reform. This is my view. Number one, and I'm speaking here as J. Secular American Center for Law and Justice. I'm not speaking as the president's lawyer here. This is my view. So number one, border security is how you start this. And we're already seeing progress made on that. Border crossings are down, just the enforcement mechanisms are there. So you got to start with border security, number one. Number two, the DACA one I think is easy. I think most people agree, Republicans and Democrats, that getting a system in place where there's either work permits or permanent status of some type is the way to handle that. That's what the president's really saying by sending it back, in my view, to the legislature. They get that through. I think that becomes law. Then you've got 12 million people that are here illegally. And I think it's ridiculous to assume that you're going to be able to deport 12 million people. So there needs to be, it doesn't have to be a pathway to citizenship. And that can be part, you could stage that in. But it has to be some kind of process where the person's checked, verified, and then given a work permit and paying taxes and participate, rather than just living off the government dole, participating in coming out of the shadows that way. But it has to be done through the legislative process. That's how this has to move forward. So when I'm talking about comprehensive immigration reform, that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's realistic to say we're going to, you know, deport 12 million people, Harry, from the United States. That's my view. I just don't think that's realistic.
Absolutely. So I'm in total agreement with you, but I would start with first reestablishing the president's constitutional and statutory authority within the immigration arena. I would also focus on securing the border, and I would also encourage the president to continue extreme vetting of refugees and immigrants.
Yep.
Then work permits for DACA recipients, a pathway to permanent residence, perhaps the payment of a fine, and then the issuance of work permits and bring these individuals out of the shadows.
What do you think, Jordan, politically? I actually think that this president's going to get some reform done here.
Yes, I think you start with something like DACA gets the ball rolling. So you start with a group that's it's not so controversial. It's people who were brought to the United States as minors, so they didn't actively commit the legal violation themselves. You start there, it gets the ball rolling, and suddenly you get to the 12 million. This is a president, remember, I think he's more interested, you know, putting words in people's mouth, but it's more interested not in deporting 12 million people that are already here. It's in border security for the future.
Right.
If you get a combination of that, I think the Democrats can be happy about not kind of getting past the issue of deportation of those 12 million. Republicans can be happy about really securing the border, and you do it simultaneously and you move on and maybe forcing the ball into the Congress's court, which they did not want. Neither side.
No,
remember,
Democrats don't want
to provide relief. They want to use it as a political issue, a scare tactic. Absolutely. Republicans can't get their heads around what they want to even do. They're going to have
to figure it out.
The president forced it on them, and it will be Congress's failure if they don't do anything.
Yep.
And I think that's too much of a risk for them.
All right, let's take Larry in line four.
Larry in San Diego, you're on the air.
Hi, Larry, go ahead.
Hi, when will you demand that Sessions be fired, given the fact that your FOIA requests are being completely destroyed?
When you say completely destroyed, I mean, if you've listened to the broadcast in the last, say, 2 weeks, we've gotten a lot of information in those FOIA requests. A lot of information. We're getting more. But we're getting a lot of information on the Freedom of Information Act request, as we're entitled to under the law. So the fact is, Larry, when it comes to these various matters, we are proceeding aggressively. Look, if the Justice Department, even under Jeff Sessions, redacts something we don't think should be redacted, we don't hesitate to going back to court. But look, we're not advocating firing Jeff Sessions. I think
I don't think he's sitting around.
He's not dealing with the FOIA request. No,
it's bureaucrats in an office.
That's who you got to deal with, and that's where we're pushing back hard. Let's take another call.
All right, last call. Monty in North Carolina, you're on the air.
Hey, Monty, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to know, y'all did a good job on Benghazi about, not letting it go. I'd like to know if you're going to do anything about the affair, what's going on with Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah, look, Jordan's been really addressing that, so I'm going to let Jordan address that because that is something you've taken an interest in.
So the IT director, I think this goes to kind of the dossier for me. I mean, we only have 50 seconds here. But to me, this is someone, his family fled the country. They defrauded the federal government, millions of dollars, all working for Democrats, had access to the DNC chair's email account, which means the quote-unquote hack could have been an inside job from a guy in Pakistan who's not necessarily could have been working for nefarious. Obviously, terrorism is obviously always a concern. But also could have just been doing this to defraud people and selling, confidential information. Democrats have done a pretty good job protecting her, though she has been stripped of most of her powerful positions.
Yep.
We will see. That is far from over. That's a federal case. Yep. It's in court now.
All right, so Logan, we've got 14 seconds left. Tell everybody how they can stay engaged with us.
Just go to ACLJ.org. It's the easiest way. You can find everything you need there. You can find social media. You can find the ACLJ app. You know what to do. But ACLJ.org is your one-stop shop.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, ACLJ.